With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello and welcome back to the EPL Roundtable. I'm your host, Kevin DeVries, and as always, if you'd like to reach us at the podcast, you can do so by either tweeting us at EPL Roundtable or emailing us at eplroundtable@gmail.com. All right, we are here now with the Manchester City season review. Of course, speaking with Richard Burns, you can find on Twitter at Richard the Burns. You can also hear his dulcet tones over on the Blue Moon podcast. Richard, I gotta imagine this is going to be the happiest one of these review segments I do this season. I'm sure you're aware, Manchester City are champions. Broke, I believe it was 6 records in the Premier League. I'm sure you can touch on that in a second. But before we get into all of that and the celebrations and everything, we'll start with the final match against Southampton. 100 points on the line. Just couldn't find the back of the net for the majority. What was your view of that one?
Yeah, it was really frustrating for a large part of the game. I went to Southampton on Sunday and I think everybody went there with the expectation that City would win. I got speaking to a couple of Southampton fans outside who we'd overheard a dad talking to his son, talking about how many of our star players would be playing, and they were so sure of staying up that, granted, a very small sample size, but those Southampton fans were really keen to see the likes of David Silva, who obviously wasn't there, but and De Bruyne, and to really see the star players. And the whole thing had a bit of an atmosphere of just waiting for City to do the business and take that 100 points. Obviously, we already had the highest point record in Premier League history, but that 100 points, I think what we started to see it as, apart from being a magnificent achievement, was it would give us a tag to hang on to. So obviously you have, like, when you think of great United teams, you have the treble winners. And when you think of other great Premier League teams, you have the invincibles, the Arsenal team. It's a tag that sticks. And so I don't think anybody would forget this City team because of how good they've been, but now it's a reference point, and whether the Centurions tag that City are using it sticks or not, or whether it'll just be the 100 pointers or whatever, it's a quick reference point now for how good City have been. And so as sort of time was ebbing away at Southampton in a really dour game and in truth not a good performance, it was just, to me, it felt a bit flat. There was no great sense of tension, but just, it's a shame to finish the season without taking that one final record, that little feeling. And then De Bruyne plays that pass, and he'd had a really off game, De Bruyne, but that ball to Jesus was absolutely sublime. And Jesus' finish was magnificent. But because we were quite high up behind the goal, from my perspective, I thought he'd hit it over. So then to see it hit the back of the net, or, you know, go over the line, it was just a really, really instant burst of euphoria. And it was very fitting for this season, really, because we've had a lot of last minute wins, and it was one final record, one final achievement that marks us out as arguably the best ever champion, the best ever champions of England. The numbers do back that argument up significantly. And it was just perfect. It was, in hindsight, much like the Aguero moment 6 years ago to win the league. In hindsight, though, it makes for a frustrating game. It's the perfect way to round the season off a last minute winner. And it was very, very fitting.
How much does it mean to City fans that not only have you won the title, but you've broken all these records en route?
A lot. It means a lot because we know that. I don't think anybody's naive enough to think that winning the league once, no matter how well you do it, that is the mark of a great era. And we hear all this stuff all season about to be a great team, you've got to back it up. You've got to defend a title, which no one's done in the Premier League for a decade. You've got to start winning Champions Leagues. It's got to be multiple trophies a season, which obviously we've done a double this season. But for us as a fan base, okay, yeah, we can look forward to all that. We can think about how it's going to go next season and will we finally defend a title? Will we have a better summer than we've had in previous years where we've won leagues and then really done quite a terrible job in the transfer window? But just for now, just for pure enjoyment, we all know what we've seen this season. Those of us who are fortunate enough to watch this side every week, it's been something special. And what the records start to point at is the quality of football. I know numbers can only do so much to highlight that, but when you see highest number of goals, one of the best goal difference, and so with it one of the best defensive records, I think the best defense in the league certainly this season, most ever wins by an English top flight team, just nicking that off Spurs in the 60s, all of it really begins to point at just how exciting this team has been to watch. And so it's just given us memories that will last us a lifetime. And if we don't win the league next year, if this isn't to be a great era, or, you know, a dynasty, which I find hard to believe, I think it's set up for City to dominate the league for a while now. But you never know what's around the corner. We've got a great, great season to hang on to. And to commit to the memory banks and to tell the children and grandchildren about, sort of like our parents told us about the Lee Bell and Summerby years. It's just been absolutely magical, and it means everything to City fans particularly. And I don't want to drone on about this too much because it always comes up, but you've still got many generations of fans here that can remember some very dark days at City and the drop to the third tier and being 2-0 down at Wembley in a playoff final with about 30 seconds left on the clock for normal time. And had we lost that game 20 seasons ago, then, oh, sorry, 19 years ago, sorry, then we might never have come back from it. And instead, we stand here now, obviously, as the record-breaking champions of England, having played a brand of football that's not quite been seen in the Premier League before, with, in my opinion, the best manager in the world, certainly some of the best players in the world. And it is sort of pinch yourself to believe it stuff. So yeah, it means absolutely everything.
Yeah, you mentioned some highlights there of the season, and I realize this is a harsh question, but if you could pick out one moment from the season that stood out among the rest, what would it be?
I think to nail it down to a moment actually is probably quite easy, which might surprise you because there's been plenty. But just as an indicator of how many great games and great moments there's been, I remember a conversation with my girlfriend in March or so, maybe approaching the Champions League quarterfinal, and she's not a football fan, God love her, and she puts up with it. And I remember saying to her, whichever game it was that was approaching, I was saying, but this is a huge game. Like, if we win this, it might be the biggest game I've ever been to, or it might be the biggest win I've ever seen, or after other games I say, God, this was one of the best performances I've ever seen. And I remember her turning to me and saying, but Richard, you say that every week. And I thought, you know what, I probably do at the moment. And that to me was a little highlight of just how many great moments and great games there's been and how many things to look forward to. But to absolutely nail it down, I can't look beyond Sterling's stoppage time winner against Southampton I think it was late November, certainly that time of year when the nights were closing in and starting to get games under the floodlights. And much like the Southampton away game, it was very frustrating. We'd taken the lead. Southampton were, believe it or not, I think maybe the cleverest team that came to the Etihad in the league this season, because they did, at a time when nobody else could do it, when we were in the midst of the record-breaking winning run, Southampton came to us and they weren't interested in the ball, not even a little bit. They sat so deep and they didn't go hunting for it until City were in the final third. And it was a great way of conserving energy, which nobody else had worked out how to do against us. And they didn't get pulled around. But then in the 97th minute, Sterling gets the ball on the edge of the box and bends it into the top corner to keep that winning run going. And that was, I mean, I've already used this word, so forgive me for not being imaginative with my language, but it, again, just absolutely euphoric. Probably a noise that I've not heard at the Etihad since Aguero's winner in 2012, since he won us the league. And it was just the biggest release of emotion. And it was maybe that more than anything made us feel invincible. And you could start to see from that point teams were beaten before they went on the pitch. And it felt very much like that thing that Fergie's United used to have, where you knew that unless you were two goals up in stoppage time, that game was still open. And we've done it a few times since as the season's gone on. But that one, it was so unlikely. The position the goal was scored from was so unlikely that Sterling would score it. Obviously, as a lad, he's not been renowned for his great finishing, but that one was. Yeah, it nearly lifted the roof off the Etihad, and it was a great night after that. So, yeah, that was probably the single most special moment of the season, maybe other than Jay Rodriguez winning us the league at Old Trafford. But given that City weren't directly involved in that, I'll stick to the Sterling goal.
Yep, as we joked before, Jay Rodriguez should probably get a winner's medal.
He should have a statue outside the Etihad, Kev, for me.
You obviously have a very young core.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Now, it was largely what's happened over the last two summers, is trying to get younger. Because of that, do you think that this team will just continue to go from strength to strength?
Yeah, I do think it will get better. I think the age of the squad is key in that. There's so many young players. Edison, who's 24 and has the potential to be the best goalkeeper in the world, and certainly in playing style, is absolutely perfect to City. He's an entirely unique goalkeeper in the Premier League. You've got obviously Sterling and Sané, young 20s, who are already exceptionally talented footballers. If they improve at the rate that they should do, then we've got, and particularly in Sané's case, I think, two world-class footballers there. Obviously, Gabriel Jesus up front is 21, 22, and phenomenally talented, and he has still got, to be fair, he has got a long way to go yet to really hit top level, but he's already very, very good. So if he improves at the rate he should do, then very, very promising for the future. There's a good mix of experience. Company, Fernandinho, and the like, phenomenally experienced and still very, very talented. Company's issue is just keeping him fit. Stones and Laporte are the intended future of that defence. We'll see how that one works out. But Laporte looks an extremely good signing. And then you've got the players who are sort of in the middle of that, like De Bruyne, who we've all seen this season that he's up there with the very, very best players in the world. Could have won the PFA Player of the Year, and arguably should have done, but it's hard to argue against Mo Salah, to be fair. So there's so much talent in that squad. We know that we've got Pep for at least a season further. My belief is that he will sign an extension for 1 year. And so, yeah, they've made good on the promise so far. Now they've got to build on that, and I do believe they'll get better. Pep's history shows that after his first season at Barcelona, when he absolutely swept the board and won everything, that team improved. It doesn't mean that we'll get more than 100 points next season. It doesn't mean that we'll win more than two trophies or anything like that, but you will see an improvement in this team's style of play. And the real interest is to see how they develop tactically and then to see how the league keep up. Because each team can only affect City twice a season. So United will probably improve under Mourinho. You never know how his third season syndrome is going to affect him, but they might improve. Liverpool are clearly going to be a dangerous opponent. If they can, they're a very, very good cup team. If they can just get more consistency in the league, then they could really, really challenge City. You never know what might happen with Chelsea. And Tottenham, you know, we'll see what happens there, but they're a very, very good team. But each of those teams can only affect us twice a year. And so it'll be interesting to see collectively how the league start to work City out, because they will do. City are going to have to... they're going to have to be on the toes. I don't think they can expect to just walk into games. You know, they literally start from zero in August. And the Premier League is full of shrewd managers who will work out different ways to play against or to close down space. And I don't think anybody's going to start walking into games working out how to boss possession against City, but they will work out how to blunt City. And that will be interesting to see. You know, if I had to put money on it now, I would still bet on City to win the league with games to spare. But I don't think it'll be as easy as they've made it look this year. But it's such a contrast to that, to say that while saying I think the team will improve. It is almost a contradiction, isn't it? But I suppose how they then manage all four competitions, because I would hope that next year they won't get knocked out of the FA Cup by a League One team, for example. You would hope that they've learned lessons in the Champions League, where Pep's made very few mistakes this year, but he made a massive one at Anfield by putting Gundogan on the right and completely unbalancing the team, gave us no chance. So, yeah, the expectation, I would say, has to be, and the hope has to be, that we defend the title and stick as closely to the same sort of style of football as possible. I'm intrigued to see how it improves, because I just think it has to. Individually, there's so many players there that have room for improvement that the team has to improve around that as well.
Yeah, I'm curious to hear what you made of the improvement from last year to this year. Do you think that was just kind of like inlaid in the foundation that Pep did lay last season, or were there some changes to what he was doing this year that led to this record-breaking season?
I don't think in his coaching he did anything wildly different. I do think it was a case of the squad that he started with clearly wasn't really up to playing his style and doing what he wanted to do. The fullbacks we had last year were Zabaleta, Clichy, Kolarov. Clearly not up to the job. So, and Claudio Bravo didn't end up being the keeper that Pep thought he was signing. So I think his coaching has remained the same, but the key signings, Edison and Walker, really made a huge difference to the way City played. The fact that we had a fullback who could get up and down the line, very talented up front, very good at defending. We should have been saying the same about Benjamin Mendy on the left as well, but obviously injury curtailed that. So seeing Pep put Delph at left back and then Zinchenko, and that working out brilliantly. I think that kind of recruitment and different use of his resources was key, really. But I think strictly on coaching and getting that squad to adapt to his ideas and getting that to assimilate was, I don't think he did anything different there. I think it was just the benefit of time and then having another full summer to work with them this season. Because at the end of last season, City were in very good form. They didn't lose after the FA Cup semi-final, and that was only done in extra time. So if you took it as 90 minutes, defeats over 90 minutes, they actually didn't suffer too many in the second eight, but certainly the back half of last season. So I think we were starting to see the signs then, and this year the recruitment has just made such a huge difference.
Yeah, I definitely think that Pep has done a fantastic job. And I think he did win the official Manager of the Year award the other day, yeah?
He did, from both the LMA and the Premier League. He won two.
Ah.
Yeah.
Well, there you go then.
Yeah, I think it had to be that way. I think there's only been three previous occasions where the league winning manager didn't win manager of the season. And two of those were the previous two times City won the league. So as much as like the likes of Benitez and Sean Dyche have done great jobs, and I do get that we're talking about very different situations, but when you've got in Guardiola a manager who's just achieved a winning record that has never been done in this country before, a points total that's never been done before, even when you adjust the old era when you only got 2 points for a win. If you adjust that to 3 points, still nobody gets to 100. Nobody scored this amount of goals before. If you really can, if you're comparing that to Sean Dyche, who, yes, seventh was a great achievement, but that's a Burnley team that went 11 games without a win. You know, that's almost a third of the season. It becomes harder and harder to argue against Guardiola, I think. So I think it was absolutely the right award given there.
Yeah, before we can look forward too far, though, as we were doing with projecting how Guardiola is getting better and the youth of your squad, first you kind of got to let the, to quote Kylo Ren, you have to let the past die. and with that comes the departure of Yaya Toure, obviously a massive figure in the history of Manchester City. What do you make of his contributions to the club throughout and his departure now?
His departure is absolutely right because he only started one league game this season, and that was one born out of sentiment to make sure that he got his proper send off against Brighton. But his contribution to City in his 8 years here is beyond comparison. Nobody has made the same contribution as Yaya Toure. I heard it said recently, and it's a point that I completely agree with, that David Silva is our best player ever. I think that's generally accepted at City now. But Yaya Toure is probably the most important, because, or certainly in this era, because the goals that that guy has scored, if he just went off goals alone, the FA Cup semi-final against United in 2011, when we hadn't won a trophy for 35 years and United were there ready to be the team that kicked us down again and would have gone on to win the FA Cup. They would have beat Stoke. They would have done a double that year because they won the Premier League. And it would have just been another case of City falling comically. And they didn't. His goal changed everything. And then to do it again in the final against Stoke for another 1-0 win. I don't really think it's an exaggeration to say that that goal changed. It changed City. It changed the whole club. It changed the perception of them. It gave them a foundation to build everything else on, because there was tangible success. For all that promise, for all the money spent, for all the big name signings, they actually had something tangible now, and something to further sell to players. Like, look, this is where we're going. We are a trophy-winning team now. Look what we do in the big moments. And then a year later, to back it up again with his two goals at Newcastle that set up the final day against QPR. That Newcastle game was falling away from City a little bit, and it was certainly after 60 minutes when he got the first goal. And then 13-14, only the second midfielder ever in the Premier League era to get over 20 goals in a season. Big, big goals. And then at Wembley again to score the final penalty against Liverpool in 2016. The League Cup final in 2014 when City were pedestrian in a stagnant game against a really bad Sunderland team. He decides he's going to just place the ball in from 35 yards and changed everything. I mean, Yaya scored goals that lifted the weight of history off City. And that I do think changed the whole club. He had a mentality different to almost any other player. He's a born winner. And, you know, it's been a mutually beneficial relationship. City have been very good for Yaya Toure too. But this era, he's synonymous with this era in Premier League football now. And when you think of this as City's golden era, which it really is, Toure's name is there every step of the way, apart from this season, which is why it's right that it's come to an end. But I hope it's not soured. I hope that his agent doesn't come out and make any offhand comments about how this season's gone and about his lack of playing time. I suspect that he will do, because he struggles to keep his mouth shut. But in strictly plain terms alone, Toure is an absolute colossus in City history and will be remembered as such. And his farewell was very emotional. It was, to be honest, a little bit choked up watching him walk off that pitch one final time.
Yeah, other potential departures on the player side. Who else do you think could be finding themselves near the exit door?
That's a tough one. So I think Claudio Bravo, possibly, if we can bring in a good number two. I mean, Bravo isn't a good number two, but you can't just let him go with no replacement. We've got Angus Gunn out on loan at Norwich, who I believe, I'm not going to lie and say I've seen loads of him, but I think he's had good reviews this season. I think he's impressed people, so maybe he'd be a good number two. Or whether they go and source another one. I would imagine Bravo will be leaving because he's just not up to the job. I know he won the League Cup and did all right in it, but he's still got mistakes in him. With the return of Mendy, that is going to knock Delph and Zinchenko down the pecking order. I think there's a very good argument to say we don't need to sign a left back and we can keep Delph as a back, as the secondary left back, in which we're still getting plenty of game time, I think. On the other side, Danilo hasn't worked out as hoped. As a fullback by trade and one that cost us 25 million, to find himself behind a behind two midfielders in contention for a left back.
Dolphins and Zinchenko?
Yeah, to find himself behind them in the left back slot. And I know he's not a natural left back himself, but he is a fullback. So that game should come more naturally to him than it does to the other two. Suggest that he's not going to be troubling the first team too many times next season. Truth is that although I wouldn't say he's looked terrible, and I think it would be unfair to judge him too much without a run in the team, the fact that he's not had a run in the team probably speaks volumes. So and he's never going to muscle Kyle Walker out of that team. He would need Walker to be absent for a long time for him to get a run at right back. So he might look to for a move to somewhere where he's going to get more game time, because I think he had a similar experience at Madrid, and it's all well and good hanging around big teams, but at some point a footballer's got to want to play. So I wouldn't be surprised if he moved, and we could probably recoup the money for him. And other than that, it gets harder. Then you're into what the Aguero situation is going to be, and that's a very hard one to speculate on. You would hope he stays. And he's had a very good season, but you never quite know what that relationship with Guardiola's like. So other than that, I don't really see many departures. It becomes who are we going to recruit? I think we need two signings and then work on the contracts for Sterling, Sané and Jesus and get those three absolutely tied down.
Could be a departure from the managerial side. Obviously not Pep Guardiola, but Mikel Arteta, I believe, is your number two at the moment, being linked back to Arsenal this time, potentially as their manager. What would you make of that, and do you sense that coming?
I think it's highly possible. There's a lot of noise has been generated around that since the weekend, certainly since Allegri confirmed that he'd be staying at Juventus. I think the odds have shifted massively to Arteta. He is, and Guardiola said everything without saying anything really when he said that he wants the best for his friends, and he'd be very sad to see Arteta go, but he's a friend and he would never deny him an opportunity, which when somebody's speaking like that suggests that the opportunity is there. It would be a shame because I like the idea of Arteta staying on the coaching staff and maybe taking over from Guardiola in future, because that certainly seemed an option for City. He's very, very highly thought of on the coaching staff, very highly thought of. Pep, I think Pep's a big fan of him and how he has helped contribute to the team's positional play and the possession play. And he made a comment recently, Guardiola, who doesn't really give praise easily, and he said, there's been a number of occasions this season when Arteta has been taking the warm-up before the game and he's come in and said to me, said to Pep, that he knew we were going to have a good game today because of how the players had been in the warm-up, and Pep said that it always transpired that was to be the case, and he said it's quite obvious that he's got a great eye for how things are going to pan out. So when you're getting a reference like that from Pep Guardiola, who knows a thing or two about coaching, you can see why he'd be appealing to Arsenal, who are clearly looking for a coaching model with a CEO rather than having a manager like they had in Wenger. Arteta obviously does know the culture of the club. And you would think by being on Guardiola's coaching staff, he must have the principles to carry on in that that style of football that Arsenal want to continue with, that Wenger's embedded there. So it would be a risk, but he's clearly got ideas and ambition beyond being a number two or a coach. And so maybe it would be the perfect fit. So from a selfish perspective, I'd love us to keep him and maybe work him towards being City manager one day. But if the opportunity is there, it's extremely hard for him to turn down. And I would, I'd wish him the best with that, really.
What kind of negative impact would that have on Manchester City?
Well, you've got to think that at that level, replacing a coach isn't quite like replacing a manager. And you've got the, you know, you've got the coaching structure is still there. So I don't think it would send us into some kind of spiral of decline. But certainly you want an element of consistency. And if something's working well, you'd rather not change it. But for all that he's highly thought of, you'd hope that he's replaceable as a coach. He's not the main decision maker. Although, you know, Pep's worked with plenty of coaches in his time and he's got the backroom staff there that he already trusts. So if he needs to bring in another coach, I'm sure he'd find an able deputy. And one of the things that United always did brilliantly was how many different number twos did Fergie work with in his era? Carlos Queiroz, Brian Kidd was one of them, Steve McClaren. And that was always a way that he actually kept things fresh. So maybe it would give Guardiola a chance to freshen things up. I'm sure he'd rather not have to, but just to keep people on the toes and bring some new ideas in and stop anybody resting on the laurels, maybe there'd be something to be said for that, to be fair.
All right, and then just to wrap up with, we mentioned this a little bit earlier about what you're expecting next season. Maybe another title would certainly be something you would desire, but what will expectations be, do you think, for Pep and the squad and then from the fans next year?
I do think the expectation will be to defend the league. I think that will be the key one. They obviously continuing with the style of football, evolving tactically to make sure that we don't get complacent, that we don't get worked out too much. Like I said before, I think teams will find different ways of dealing with City, but Pep is pretty good at staying one step ahead of the game. So I think as long as we don't find ourselves getting easily frustrated by teams or anything like that, then I think we'll see another season where we don't lose a whole lot of games. I would expect us to win the league next year, but that's with the caveat of you don't know what happens over the summer to other teams. And then beyond that, it's looking to win a trophy alongside it. The League Cup is a good one to have, but it's not the most prestigious. I would love another FA Cup because not having one since 2011 in this era where we've won the other domestic trophies multiple times, I'd love us to add another FA Cup. But then obviously the Champions League is the big one. I mean, I don't see it as the most important one, but from a prestige point of view, from a position of winning something that we haven't won before, and it's the only thing that we've got left to win other than the Europa League. But if we find ourselves competing for that, then something's gone wrong. It's taking steps forward in the Champions League, but I always think that's a very hard thing to measure because we could reach the semi-final next year but without having a game as difficult as Liverpool, or we could finish second in the group, but that might be a group with Real Madrid in it, which is hard to compare to, you know, is that a backward step from winning a group that this year didn't have a team of that strength in it? So I always think the Champions League is hard to benchmark year on year. This year we've got two teams in it who are a long way from being the best teams in their own country, but have made great cup sides. So it's so hard to set an expectation for the Champions League. But that said, I'd like us to win it. and doubling that up with the domestic league would be absolutely perfect. But for me, it's about learning in that competition. It's about not making the same tactical mistakes without getting too bitter about it. You've got to have a bit more luck with decisions than we had against Liverpool. They weren't the main reasons that we lost, but we were denied a clear penalty, had two goals disallowed that shouldn't have been at key times, and conceded a goal that was offside. So you do need a bit more luck than we got. But yeah, win the league again. And then look for some kind of improvement in the Champions League. But I'm not the man to benchmark what that improvement would be.
Mm. Well, for your sake, I hope Manchester City do well. For mine, I hope it isn't winning another title. But it certainly wouldn't be surprising based on the club's trajectory at the moment. All right, Richard, thank you so much for coming on. Why don't you tell the folks where they can find you?
Yes, I am on Twitter. My handle is at Richard the Burns, where I am usually either saying how good City are or laughing at United's misfortune. So if that's your bag, catch me there. I'm also on the Blue Moon podcast. Their Twitter handle is at Blue Moon podcast. That won't start up again until next season now, but we have just finished with our end of season live show that was recorded at a bar in Manchester with an audience of City fans. So you can hear that. We had ex-Manchester City player Nicky Weaver on the panel with us, which from a personal perspective, he was one of my childhood idols, so that was great. And again, if that fits you, that might make a worthy listen. And other than that, I write for one article a week for Yahoo, although again, that is on a summer break now. So I'll have to reinvent my Twitter content for the summer, but feel free to give me a follow if you would like.
You could always just start tweeting six again. All right. Well, definitely nice chatting with you, and I'm sure we'll speak soon.
Yeah. Cheers, Kev. Cheers for this season. It's been a blast as always.